Well, hey, Gun Maniacs, welcome to the Gun Explained show live. Well, yeah, if you're joining live, obviously it's not live if you're listening to that. In fact, oh man, I already ruined the show. No, I'm joking. I am your host, Adam Blue. I always love to do that. Like I pick at little things I say and make a joke about it. I don't know. And speaking of jokes, no, I'm joking. See, that was horrible. Steven and Midnight Adam's up, man. Perfect.
No. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I think very few people picked up a joke that I posted on Instagram and Twitter the other day. You and I both received some awesome swag from Zionic Shadow representing Zeke New York. So we both got our new t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
We both made a post about it. The song that I set my video, like my little slideshow to, you know, it's kind of a little self-deprecating joke by calling myself a joke. Like,
yeah, but that type of humor is fun though. I don't know what it is. It's, it's not that I'm like confident about myself but it's just something funny about being lighthearted and just, and yeah. I think it helps because like, I always know I'm putting myself out there. I could at any time say something stupid. And so I think by kind of joking with myself, it allows me to kind of, feel a little more free and that, hey, that's going to happen, you know?
I mean, it's worth noting that, you know, excluding Bluecast, you and I stream a combined like 1,000 hours a year.
Yeah.
So if you think about, or not 1,000, 100 hours a year, right? 52 times...
If it's maths, I don't know, but yeah.
Something like that. It's a lot. 100 hours a year of just uninterrupted stream of consciousness thought.
I know.
And so at any given moment, we are always saying something stupid. It's why when I live stream Gunpla stuff, I'm like, I'm going to show you where I screw up because I know that you guys, and I know that some of those pro Gunpla builders, they screw up too. They just cut that out of the footage.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think it's what makes this cool. It's what then kind of balances when we do those deep dives.
Exactly. So,
if you guys haven't checked it out yesterday on Steven's channel, awesome discussion yet again. This has to do with localization. And I know that is a big topic, especially on Twitter and stuff where, you know, people usually talk about that type of stuff. So, yeah, check that out if you're interested. So, you know what? I've got a game for you, Steven.
Oh, great.
Yep, exactly. We're going to do that here in a little bit. It'll be fun.
Okay, sweet. Are the rules of this one at least a little clearer? I remember like halfway through last one, the chat was like, wait, what are the rules of this game that they're doing?
No, this one is super clear. It's okay. Super clear. But also, you know, shout out to the chat, WD30, Simply New Type. Good to see you guys. And then, yeah, in the chat, there's a poll, and it actually just messed up on me. I can't see it anymore. But,
yeah.
It was for IBO, so I'm like asking, is IBO top tier? Yes, no, or it's mid. You know, so
curious right now it's deadlocked, 33% in every answer. So
interesting. Okay, yeah, we'll see because since starting this channel, I've had people ask, you know, when are you going to watch IBO? When are you going to watch IBO? And I'm like, yeah, it looks all right. I'll get to it eventually, and. It's just I was getting it so much more recently that I'm like, all right, I got to do a video about this. And even the comments, like people are like, wow, I'm glad you're covering this. And it was very positive. And it was people excited about IBO. And I think that's like really awesome that it's something that, you know, is old now. It's almost 10 years old now. And I'm now covering it. And then people are like very excited. It's like different than normally when you're covering something. Someone would be like, oh, here we go. Look at this white guy. He's going to talk about some anime. But
no. Well, and the funny thing is, I'm surprised that people haven't given you a harder time for like picking up other shows, like watching Gunbuster and watching Exo Squad before getting to IBO. Yeah. It's like, wait a second. I thought this was Gundam Explained. And the guy's talking to me about like Exo Squad and the Neo Sapiens.
You know what? I think that's a good PSA because we all need that palate cleanser. Because you Agreed. Could get to your to a point where you think you then need to be watching something all the time, and you need that break, and that's what I think I've gotten to a point in my life where I know how to balance that stuff better than before. So yeah, with Gundam, that's why I haven't got tired of doing this Gundam channel. Whereas every day I'm making videos and live streaming, it's that balance, you know. And I just was reminded doing that this IBO video, like how much fun that was back when I was doing Unicorn and Witch for Mercury. And then some of those build shows, like when I can watch something and then talk about, you know, it's fun to make videos like that. And people typically respond.
I mean, it's like starting the channel all over again, because it's like you get that first, you know, that first hit, that first first viewing pleasure. You know, it's not like you're going back and doing this retrospective and all this stuff where you like you have to, you know, you can really give your genuine first impressions without having to have all this baggage associated with it. And, you know, it goes back to something that you say all the time about like the collector's mentality that I know a lot of our audience, our shared audience, deals with, being like Gunpla fans and things like that. You know, you don't have to collect every high grade that comes out.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to, you know, unless you want to, but you don't have to. Just get the ones you like. Like, that's.
And that reminds me, and I know I told you about this, I was on David Jaffe's live stream yesterday, and it was kind of a similar thing, like where he brings this up and people usually push back, but it's like you don't have to beat every game you play. You can get to a point where I enjoyed this, but I don't have the time to, I want to get to another game. And I think it's freeing once you realize that. And that's, the same with collecting or watching.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see. Yeah. WD 30th is, you know, saying that they like the series. And then I like this from Jam Kill X. It's not a video without a mention of Exo Squad. You see, these companies can just get me when like they come out with something or I discover something. If it's not Exo Squad or X-Men, that's interesting. Gundam X, there's a connection.
Man, are you secretly Elon Musk? Everything is X.
No. Okay, so. Oh, yeah, speaking of Exo Squad, because I hadn't shown Gundam Explained this yet. I pulled this out of the attic. So nice to have, you know, another mech with me. One of the OG mechs from my childhood, you know, I guess
it was recalled for that hair trigger that just, like, you know, the missile just pops out for no reason.
Interesting, because these two just fall out.
Oh, okay.
And then this, and that's why these things are lost all the time. But
yeah,
I say this is like my OG mech, and I guess more in terms of something I could like watch and then have. But I think the real OG mech for me was the Power Loader from Aliens. I remember watching Aliens, think that was the coolest shit ever. And then when the toys came out, they had one. I was just mad that they made it to where the legs didn't move. It was like tread, and the treads didn't move. But it was like, what are they doing? so that's why, like,
twice.
Yeah, that's why in the West, they never do mechs right. For whatever reason, it's like we try to do mech and we can't do mech.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even acknowledge your review of Atlas, because I was like,
I'm telling you, watch it. Watch it with your wife. It's
okay.
And the other thing too about it is, I think Jennifer Lopez is a good actress.
Yeah.
And
she has
scenes purpose. Like, it's like she did this on purpose with the movie. She's like, what can I have a movie that challenges me, but then a lot of people will like it? So they had some dude and people make an awesome sci-fi story. And then a lot of her scenes are just her in the mech. So obviously on a chair with a green screen, where she's talking about her trauma and then being emotional. So there's a lot of her crying. There's a lot of her. So for me, it was like,
it's like Gundam.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the middle of this battle, you're in your cockpit, and they're talking about, like,
but you know. Dude, you bring up an excellent point. So that's how Gundam will work in live action, is if they take that in consideration, that when these people are piloting, they're not like supposed to be these badass soldiers all the time. Like, yeah, but it's like where they have this trauma and then they're like questioning what they're doing with each other. It's like, why are you doing this? Like that, they need to really capture that essence.
It's crazy because you can take scenes directly out of the 1979 anime and you get all of that raw emotion. In particular, I'm thinking of like episode 6, Garma Strikes. Amuro realizes that he's defending the white base alone against all of, you know, Garma's men, the DOPS, the Magella tanks and stuff like that. And it's when he just loses it. He pulls out the beam saber and he's crying and he's like wailing on the ground on this Magella tank. And it's like, are you okay? You know, like,
yeah. I'm telling you, those are very interesting themes that they need to have in this live action movie. That would be the greatest contrast to what we're used to with something like Star Wars, where Luke can blow up an entire Death Star and then be celebrating with his friends. Millions of people just died.
Or worse, like, you know, you've got like the Marvel Cinematic Universe where everyone's like plucky and it's like,
oh, yeah.
You know,
anytime something serious happens, someone has to make a joke.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Thor's like, oops, I guess I accidentally blew up this. It's like, okay, dude, come on. Like, you're supposed to be the God of Thunder. Stop being like a surfer, bro.
But, you know, going back to Legendary are the ones that are in charge of this production, right? They might have a director, but they're going to be, you know, making sure it goes their way. I think Legendary is good with tone, even to know when to, like with this latest King Kong and Godzilla. I haven't seen it yet, but from the trailers, you can tell the tone is a little more goofy because it's Godzilla like body slamming and King Kong. Yeah. But if you went back, you know, the previous movies from the beginning, they had specific tones. So they were changing based on what worked, which I think is fine. It's actually interesting to think that they've never really stuck with one tone.
Oh yeah. I mean, and it goes both ways too. Like, so they can go serious. They can do, you know, melodrama and things like that. But then, you know, you turn around and look at something like Enola Holmes, which, you know, Millie Bobby Brown playing Sherlock Holmes' little sister. And, you know, it has this like kind of office-y vibe where she's like talking to the camera and breaking the third or fourth wall and doing all this stuff. Like, so they can do the Deadpool type thing, but then they can also do like big budget monster movies. So the range of Legendary Pictures is really good.
Yeah, it totally is. And them also take the fact that it's not out yet, you know, it's like, okay, at least they're, you know, not just putting out crap.
Right. Not like Syncope.
But we were just talking about him. Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Okay. So I have a game.
Uh-oh.
All right. So
I'm excited to hear this one.
And I'm glad we got the cat here. This is good luck.
Yeah. Sammy's gonna referee for us.
So this is the game. I am going to read quotes from Shar Aznable in Alucard from Castlevania, and you're going to tell me who said it.
Oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, I hope. Let me see if I can find. Okay, you tell me who said this. Don't you know only humans can feel shame?
Ooh, I'm going to say Shar Aznable.
Oh, man, you got it.
I feel like that was a trick one because it, calling out the humanity thing. That's
Yeah. Okay. So you got me there. Okay. So let me, where's this other one at? Sorry. Give me a second. I'm surprised you beat me. I've been waiting for you.
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to say Alucard, if only because it doesn't sound familiar. And I've never played Castlevania, so...
You're right. That was.
I thought you were going to hit me with that meme line. What's the meme one?
What is a man but a miserable pile of secrets? Yeah. Okay. Okay, let me find this other one.
Adam doesn't know that I have ChatGPT open and I'm like feeding them.
No, I already know you're kind of a ChatGPT for that early UC stuff anyway. So, okay. Okay. Give me a second. Cause I kind of just lost where I had the, okay. People have certain obligations. That's the main reason why I have to kill you.
Ooh. Alucard?
No, that's Shar Aznable.
Oh, wow. That one I'm not familiar with.
I thought that was interesting. I'm going to have to figure out which one. And you know what? Good point, because from your show yesterday, we were able to determine, or not that we kind of figured this out, but a lot of times a dub, sub, the quotes could be different at any time, really. I'm going to have to figure out which one that's from. I want to say that's from the original, though, but I'll have to... Look,
yeah, probably so.
What's up?
Oh, nothing. I said probably so. Yeah, I think.
Okay, so let's see. How about In truth, I may have been frightened, scared to confront my own father.
Oh. Well, that has to be Alucard, right? Because
okay, yeah.
Char's dad is... it would be interesting if he said that, because that's like... I think that would be a Quattro Bagina line, if we were like...
Okay.
Like, can you imagine him saying that to Blex, like when Blex is on his deathbed and he's saying like, oh, you should take over Zeon and like reclaim your place as Casval Daikun. Boom.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I brought that up, because of that father dynamic. But yeah, again, with it's like, it's all about for Char, like his father's legacy is obviously now his in a way, like, but like, it's not like he got to spend a lot of time with him shaping him, you know, it's almost like he had to kind of figure it out himself, what he was trying to do or be.
Yeah. So there's a metaphorical facing your father. Not to go off topic, but that is a big theme in Stephen King's The Dark Tower. There's like have you ever read those books or
no, but I've heard of it a lot.
Very cool theme that they have, because it's all about, you know, gunfighters and stuff like that. And one of the insults that they hurl at each other is that you've forgotten your father's face. And it's one of those, it's like a weird phrase, right?
Yeah.
But it's supposed to evoke feelings of like, oh, well, you forgot who you are because, you know, you're no longer your father's son type deal.
Yeah.
So there's something to that like fatherhood thing. And I think that Alucard and Char share that.
Exactly. Trauma. I forget what it was I was doing, and I think it was either early. Yeah, I think it was earlier today, and I'm like, wait a minute, Char would say that, and it was something, you know, vice versa. Here's another one: death is too good for you.
Is that Char asking?
No, Alucard.
Wow, interesting.
I know, but very similar stuff.
Yeah.
Here's one: do not hate humans.
Is that Alucard?
Well, yes, but, he's quoting his dead wife. So,
So it's a trick question. Yeah, it's a trick question.
evil is an absolute necessity in this world.
Oh man, that sounds like Alucard, but I'm guessing it's Char.
It's Alucard.
Oh
yeah. And it says, in the future, someone may follow again in Dracula's dark footsteps. At that time, perhaps we'll meet again.
Mm.
And I wonder if you could even take Dracula as an allegory for how humanity uses or treats new types or sees that dynamic between humans and new. Like, yeah, Dracula could be the stand-in almost for that.
Yeah,
because with the vampire, that's like the new type kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see.
And vampirism almost has like a similar, like, you know how new types and the Force / Jedi have like their similarities where there has to be like a balance. I almost feel like there's a same thematic bones in like vampirism where, you know, there's kind of the Sith rule where it's like, there's never just one vampire. Like,
yeah, no, because what this does is, I think the using new types, using the Force, using a vampire, it's a way to talk about deep-rooted human emotions that we normally, if it was a story just about two regular humans, that wouldn't happen. But there's a vulnerability to being a new type. There's a vulnerability to being a Force user. There's a vulnerability to being a vampire. And so I think then that allows these characters to be able to open up a little bit more and talk about things at that level. And I think that's what elevates these stories. It's almost like, what's that mechanism we can have that allows, you know, I was thinking about that with a story I'm trying to write. I'm always trying to write a story. And it's like, okay, I'm going to have these characters in a conflict, but what's a thing that can kind of be the driver, you know, like in a way for the technology, it's the Minkowski particle. Like that's just an explanation to get this to happen, but then it writes the rules for everything else.
And there's always a strong othering of that, right? Like, you know, and you see it like in X-Men too, like the idea of mutants, right? When you can create almost a biological divide between two people where they're trying to overcome this gap, that it represents something in human nature, but it's manifested in the story as something physical, something that's like a measurable difference between people.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, a measurable difference. I think that's what kind of delineates it, because people could take that measurement and come up with their own conclusion of what that measurement means. Here's one. If you want to stop getting hit, stop screwing up.
Well, that's neither of them because that's Quattro Vagina.
Okay. Oh,
there you go.
All right. Slaves to our family's wishes.
Is that Alucard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which kind of similar to Char. True. Like there's, you know, okay. Okay. But you must always remember that the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing.
Isn't that from the Boondock Saints?
Oh, maybe.
No, is that Alucard?
It's Alucard too, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to that is quoting some a famous sermon, though, I think, because it is the beginning of Boondock Saints.
Oh, okay. But so really, this game was really just to kind of play on how I find Alucard and Char to be very similar characters.
Yeah. You know?
And you see
guys with daddy issues.
Yeah. And seen as Char as a bad guy, he was still written in a way where people love him almost more than Amuro. It seems like, even though like people of Amuro, it's like Char is always like, oh, if there's a Char thing, I'm going to get the Char thing. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Alucard. Alucard came out 10 years after Castlevania, after 10 or so games. But people love Alucard. People associate Alucard with Castlevania. So it's interesting. There's just these white, blonde guys with daddy issues and this like emotional sort of baggage that they've got. It's interesting.
Yeah. You know, I was just having a conversation with someone on Discord today about, you know, satire and how, because, and the way that this got started was the actor that plays Homelander, Anthony Starr, on The Boys. He said on social media, like, he doesn't like seeing all these Homelander memes and things like that. He's like, don't you guys understand he's the bad guy? Like, why do you like Homelander? You know?
Yeah, that is interesting.
And it's, there's this kind of funny thing that happens with satire and just general story writing where sometimes you make the bad guy or the thing that you're trying to satirize too cool. And it's like, so there's a quote, I'm going to totally butcher it, but it's like, you know, effective satire relies on a clearly defined purpose and methodology. Otherwise, it risks being confused with the thing that it is attempting to satire.
That's a very good point, because I think a lot of that might have to do with fear. So, for instance, Homelander is a badass. It's amazing, but in real life, I would want to stay away from him.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? But as a viewer, I don't have to worry about it. So I can enjoy this guy being a badass. You know, I think that's kind of where that comes. It's like horror movies. You know, like horror movies are so popular because people love that feeling. Oh, but in real life, you don't want to be in a cabin in the woods and get, you know, infected by deadites.
I would hope not.
Yeah.
I don't know. People are weird.
but do you kind of see what I mean? How there's like a fear concept, I think, in these. And yes, it's like war, like liking the war in Gundam. I don't want to be in that.
Yeah.
In real life, that would be scary. But the fact that it's not real, I can embrace kind of the nature of it.
Abstraction of it.
Yes. Yeah. Without actually having to worry about it impacting my life. So I think that's more of where that comes from.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, even, you know, from the Evil Dead movies, I loved them because how gory they were. And then I loved Ash because, like, in Evil Dead 2, he was just like this scared wuss that didn't want to do anything. And then by Army of Darkness, he's just like this angry, tired old man that's like, okay, I got to kill all these deadites. You know, it's
right.
He wasn't like a typical hero. He wasn't, you know, yeah. So
there is something to that, like, hapless hero, someone like an Ash where it's, you know that he's out of his depth, yet somehow he's still effective, right? Like, yeah. I mean, the fact that he summoned the deadites by butchering the
the
pronunciation of the spell is like,
I know hilarious. It's like Inspector Gadget.
Yeah.
I mean, that Failing needs upwards. To be a crossover. Oh my God. The hat opens and it's a chainsaw. Like, there's a crossover there. I wanted to bring up Jem Kill X saying like Starship Troopers movie. And I think that's another good example because the Starship Troopers world is not a world I want to live in.
Yeah.
But the whole idea of like these people, yeah, to be a citizen, I'm going to join the military and fight aliens. Like, that's awesome.
Right. But they made it make too much sense to root for the humans in that movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because I understand what Paul Verhoeven was trying to critique, like the jingoism and like the propagandization of everything. But the problem is like, well, but they're bugs that are like murdering people. Like they're not, you know, like.
Yeah. So that's actually interesting because I was watching or listening because usually I listen to these things because I'm working, but Inside of You podcast, Michael Rosenbaum, are you familiar? I
love that podcast.
He had, Casper Van Dien on the other day. And He was even saying when he read the script, he had already read the book as a kid.
Oh, wow.
And when he read the script, he's like, oh, I get what they're doing because he saw how funny it was. But he said when he read the book, it wasn't funny. But at the same time, he wasn't like saying, oh, this author's trying to say this is what the world should be. The author was just telling a story.
Yeah.
And he said that, you know, especially with Helldivers 2, Starship Troopers is getting more popular. But he says he's surprised about the people that take the movie seriously. I guess if it was propaganda for real. And I had never thought people would really take that seriously. But the only time it started seeming that way is on Twitter. You know, nowadays when younger people that are now being able to talk about their views online tend to say things just based on inexperience. And
yeah, and there's always the dopamine hit from posting something hyperbolic that catches a lot of catches a lot of engagement. So, you know, there's a rule of extremism there where it's like, you know, when you post something that's like completely outrageous and people latch onto it, then it feeds the need to post more outrageous things.
You know what? That's crazy. Cause I was listening to Star Wars Explained yesterday. Cause you know, they're talking about the Acolyte. I'm curious how much she's shilling. No, I'm joking because really the show's not that great. And you can even tell
I've not touched it yet, but,
and it's funny cause you could tell the way he's talking about it. It's more of, he's just explaining what's going on and how it connects, but he's not like, oh, it's so awesome. You know, it's, you could tell he's, but anyway, cool guy. But what he was talking about was, I forgot cause I was talking so much. Hold on, give me a second. Yes, here we go. Twitter. It was where he went on Twitter and saw people complaining about, and it's like, okay, that's the problem. You know, if there's this weird complaint someone makes on Twitter and it like, it's just that one person, we should have a new thing. You know how they have the community comments? They should have a new one like, do not engage. Like, or something like, here's this person. It's a 14-year-old at home that just types something. You don't need to.
So that begs a question, right? So I want to hear your opinion on this because obviously, you know, we're both Star Wars fans. We both enjoyed the prequels. I enjoyed the heck out of them when I was younger. Like I didn't see anything wrong with them, but the internet was still pretty. It was still pretty much in its infancy. Social media hadn't really kicked off, and so the only people that were really writing on the internet were like journalists and like people that actually had credentials to comment on these things. And of course they shredded the prequels, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like, you know, later high school that I was like, oh yeah, the prequels were kind of dumb, weren't they? And it's like, well, no, they weren't. This is other people influencing my opinion of it. But nowadays, I think that the democratization of being able to express yourself online, don't get me wrong, has had some disastrous effects.
Yeah.
But I also think that we are getting a much more authentic ear to the ground when it comes to what people enjoy and what people don't.
Yeah.
I think that when there was a lot more, for lack of a better word, gatekeeping around like distributing content, distributing information, it was easy to just adopt whatever was written in like a Kotaku or like comic book resources, like all of these outlets that we were familiar with, you know. But as time has gone on, you know, their credibility has kind of gone down on account of the fact that like other people have kind of filled in their place. And but the thing is now we're almost like at a pendulum swing too far the other way, right? Like,
completely agree. I agree because you know, what's happening is it's because there's this weird underlying like social media aspect of it. So like, and I'm going to use the games journalism as an example, because I'm so embedded into that.
For sure.
All the people in games media use Twitter all the time and communicate. That creates this bubble that actually is not representative of everything going on. That's representative of this sort of more of a dramatic argumentative style thing. And the other thing, which, you know, it's so there's being progressive, and then there's being a militant progressive, where it's almost like you don't like that someone doesn't like progress, or you don't think what someone is doing is considered progressive. So then you will just put them in a separate bubble, and then virtue signal that across games media, since everyone's connected on Twitter, to then shame this person to then be in their own. And so that it has, I think, infected online games journalism. That's why games journalism isn't like it used to be. There's not very interesting news articles about facts and statements. It's really about people reporting on something, but then spending their time to like,
And
this is where Giant Bomb Jeff Grubb got in trouble recently, because he was talking down and where he started speculating on things he heard, which weren't accurate, by saying like that the Perfect Dark game is troubled. And yet it got, you know, shown at the Xbox showcase. It got even called out by the developer saying none of that is true, but it was because he was already in a negative place and they just kept double downing on it. And it's like, I think it's okay to have an opinion, but you have to be careful making assumptions that are negative when there's nothing that, you know, again, it's almost saying that thing, you know, attribute the stupidity, what could be, however you say that. I think it's the same thing there. Like when
people aren't being malicious, they're just being ignorant.
Which, yeah, exactly.
And I think that there is some aspect of like, you have this, I always talk about it when we're talking about Gundam, right? Because people will typically say like, you know, 0083 is so good because it doesn't have a stupid like school dueling story like Witch from Mercury, right? And I always say like, you know, if you can't speak positively about the thing that you love without denigrating something that you don't, then how much do you really love that thing? And it seems to me like whether it's, you know, the Acolyte, whether it's games journalism, whether it's any kind of interactions going on Twitter, I don't see anybody in the creative space or in journalism really speaking positively about the things that they like without denigrating things that they don't.
Yeah.
And that's kind of just where we are in the culture. And
because once you break away from that mindset, you feel free. But the thing is, once you go online and start socializing and wanting to find a tribe, you tend to then do that. It's almost like it's this built-in thing we do, but we don't need to. There's just not enough guidance around, you know. And I always think like social media, it seemed it did things good, like the Me Too movement. It kind of exposed where there's the stuff going on, but then it also, the pendulum swing, like you were talking about, it went the whole other direction. So I think what it takes is people like you and I that then want to talk about the stuff we like, but always remember, let's try not to be negative, you know?
Yeah.
And speaking, oh no, go ahead.
What? No, I was going to say like, that's one of the reasons, like, I don't even like whether it's Twitter or like traditional journalism outlets, I prefer just watching like documentaries about how games were made and things like that. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I try to filter what I'm actually seeing just not to get, but anyway, okay. There was a couple things I wanted to get to, and I was going to say, speaking of negative, because that, okay. So I'm going to end the poll. So hopefully it then shows up for me because,
oh, it looks like it's still deadlocked. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there we go.
Roughly.
Yeah. Okay. So is IBO top tier Gundam? We've got no, 38%, which I mean, there's a lot of Gundam to be top tier. It's mid 38% and yes to 23%. So really top tier, not being top tier is not negative.
No. So it reminds me of Talladega Nights. If you're not first, you're last.
That's the stupidest
thing I've ever heard. You could be second, you could be third.
No, and that's what I wanted to get at, because what's interesting is I was talking about at the beginning how more than any other show, it seems people are most excited about the coverage of IBO, like in terms of people asking me and then the response to my video. And that is really
interesting.
Cool. I know. Yeah. So, Rogue, I was high when I said that, Bobby. Team Swagalas, I like this. It's okay. Old school UC is still top. Yeah. It will always be top.
Well, you know, what's funny is, so I was digging around to see, like, you know, what was the most popular Gundam, which, of course, depending on where you look, you're going to get different answers all the time, right? So I looked at the Reddit poll. I don't remember if it was on Mecha or on, like, r/Gundam, but, and this goes back to the conversation I was having with Xeonic Scans, where I was like, okay, so what is still the most popular Gundam? Is it the most recent one? Is there like a recency bias, or is there, you know? So the number one Gundam on Reddit is 0080.
Oh.
So take that as you will. I think Zeta was like top five.
Oh, okay.
Original UC Gundam was like 15th. It was pretty far down the line. Which, you know, that hurt my feelings a little bit.
Yeah.
And I took that personally.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that there was some recency bias going on in that poll, because IBO, I think, was like second or third.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see when I get through it, but 0080 being first makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
It's where Sunrise wants to make another Gundam, but without Tomino, but they're like, okay, let's make sure that we are doing what Tomino set out to do.
Just and it's like fresh Gundam distilled down into like the perfect 3-hour block.
Yeah. So that's cool. I like that. Okay. I want to show you guys something else that's pretty cool.
Now, speaking of CBR.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Okay. I want you guys to watch this and tell me what you see. You might have just saw it.
I was going to say, did you? You might have spoiled it by saying you see.
Anyway, so this is from a Superman cartoon that's out right now. But that dude's got a Gundam shield and a darksaber, or whatever that's called, right? Is it a darksaber?
I think that is the darksaber.
Mandalorian. No, isn't that so that's just kind of cool that there's people in animation that are deliberately like, hey, we have 100 frames and we're going to put some Gundam shit in there. You know, it's like someone had to say, we're going to design this shield like this. And I mean, it has a little star, the Federation star.
I was going to say the star is what really sells it, because, like, you know, a hexagon shaped shield isn't too.
Name another hexagon shaped shield. Come on. That looks like, I mean.
The one from Call of Duty.
No, it's so distinct. Like, even the corners.
The trim on it is like it's.
Yeah, look, and that animation's cool. Look, that guy just like kicked him, and then I might have to watch this show. And that's not even super. This is a Superman show, and it's just some big dude.
Didn't even like belly bump him.
Dude, I can connect with this.
Honestly, that would be a cool move for the Gundam to pull off.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you never see the Gundam use its shield for like offensive maneuvers. Like, there's the distraction tactic.
Yeah.
Or
defensive, but it's never really to like, or not. In fact, maybe we'll see that Requiem for Vengeance because of that shield design.
That'd be pretty cool.
That's some cool animation. So it's funny because I watched the first episode of this accidentally. I think it was last summer. We were at the cabin. No, last summer at this cabin, you know, they had the cable. Yeah. I turned it on. Nothing to watch. Oh, this is a cartoon. And it was pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty neat. Okay. Another thing, we're just going to do this real quick. And you don't have to say anything. But I felt it's you know, to bring it up, I can't remove this ad. And that just ruined this whole thing. But yeah, this dude that we know, the voice actor of Amuro, is getting recast. He was going to be that Metaphor ReFantazio game. So this is kind of how far that stuff went.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. But just an update on that. I don't know what that means for like Gundam going, were they going to do any other UC stuff and use his voice?
Well, so they said that they were using voice actors in Gundam Breaker 4, which I was like, everyone got all excited. They were like, oh man, we might get to see like Char and all these people come back in Gundam Breaker 4. And I was like, they don't have real characters in Gundam Breaker 4. Like it's,
yeah, because it's like the Gundam Breaker character universe. Or
yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
So I don't know if they were planning on having like Amuro appear in Gundam Breaker 4. If so, they're probably going to yank him, but
yeah. Yeah, that's unfortunate. And then Lucas Garrett, I can see General Sam Lane, Lois Lane's father, being a fan of old school Gundam. So is that who that was? Because I don't
know. So.
Okay, I don't know too much about DC and stuff. And that, yeah, that, and I know Lucas Garrett has a lot of knowledge on this stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah, probably, and that's the thing. They can find a comparable voice. You know what I'm fine with, but I know it's up, really up to the actor, is the AI voices. Like if someone was like, if I voiced a character when I was 30 and then I was 60 and they're like, hey, Adam, you know, if we AI use your voice from when you're 30, it'll just sound better. I'd be like, yeah, do it, because I know I would want that. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, that brings up a good point. This was months and months ago. I watched that Val Kilmer documentary, kind of talking about his life and everything. And he wrote it, you know, it's supposed to be narrated by him. But because of the throat cancer, like obviously he can't speak. So his son actually did the narration as him, and it was spot on. Like you could not tell it wasn't Val Kilmer.
Was it that he sounds like his dad, or he purposely tried because it could be easily done, sound like his dad?
I don't know. You know, maybe he probably put a little bit more effort into it. Yeah. You know, probably like tried to deliver his lines similarly. I can't imagine he would sound too much different from his father, but like, you know, there's definitely some effort applied there.
Have you ever said something and then you were like, that sounded like my dad?
Oh yeah, all
just
the time.
Like, yeah, like little things. Like it might just be like a reaction or something. Yeah. Like the type, yeah, that my dad would do, and something like, wait, that sounds like
now dad. Do you think that the AI voice thing, though, do you think that that alleviates them of any of the fan backlash about the actor himself?
You know what? That's a very tough one, because like I that's something I've struggled with for a while, you know, but like, I don't know. I would just go with it, because I've kind of learned in life, it's best not to involve myself with all the drama in the world, because there is too much of it and it is everywhere you look, and you're only going to depress yourself, I guess, by doing that. So it's like, sometimes it's like, I don't know. I would think there would be fan backlash, but
probably
it would be one of those things where, yeah, I don't know, that there's so many layers to that. 'Cause then would he get compensated? Is it right that he's still compensated? But is that really related to what he did? Even though what he did was bad, but people can still work a job, gain an income while paying for their consequences. You know, it's.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of, you know, completely canceling a person over something that might have been a personal dispute between them and another person. We will never know what happened in those regard. Like we don't know, like we're getting two different sides of the same story. We get a lot of people speculating. We don't know. So it's unfair of any third party to sit there and condemn one party or the other. And it kind of reminds me of like the, Johnny Depp, Amber Heard situation.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, that was an extremely toxic relationship, but whose business is it? Besides theirs,
yeah,
you know, like
that's a really good point. So when I was fascinated in watching that, and I was telling myself, is it right for me to be fascinated and watch this? But then I was able to kind of come up with what it was, is that I know, as a person that's been in a relationship, like there are sometimes things that I might say or do, they say or do, that it's like, is that really right? Like what's happening is, we're seeing people that are normally in a private setting where they are able to be more of a different person with each other. That could be bad, but could be good. And I do think it's kind of wrong that sometimes that's put on display, because there's a reason, you know. Now, if it is to root out something, where it could be, but it really seemed this turned into more of just like a media thing.
Yeah.
Instead of a real legit issue.
You know? Exactly. I mean, that's the thing that gets me about it is it's like, if there's not like a crime committed or, you know, someone who's grievously harmed by what happened, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, like
I would say the best takeaway is, you know, depending on, you would have to look at each situation and be like, is this something that is a systemic problem? Maybe that's rooted in just society today, you know, and, you know, maybe it has to do with drinking. Maybe it has to do with when people are scared in a relationship that they're going to leave each other. Is society not really built to give people support systems? Or when people have a bunch of money because they're celebrities. Like, what kind
I was
of
about to say, I think that one of the things that is particularly fascinating about the, I'm going to butcher his name, Toru Furuya situation is that it came as a result of his celebrity.
Yeah.
So it's like, if we as fans of a property, as fans of, you know, franchise, if we didn't have that celebrity worship and that celebrity, you know, that idolatry that goes along with it, then would he have ever been in the position to have been in this relationship that was obviously, you know, it was wrong for a lot of reasons. And then his behavior was completely unacceptable. But, you know, how much of that is, are we to blame? At a certain point, celebrity is just a liquor cabinet, you know, and the more you feed celebrities' mindsets and tell them how important they are and tell them how, you know, I feel like there's something there that is like an untreated mental illness.
I mean, we could even just say Robin Williams. Mm. Why did he commit suicide? That's not that he hurt anybody.
Yeah.
He hurt himself, right? And I think, I mean, being someone with his status, with the money, you would think he would have the support systems, but he didn't. What does that mean to say how we... even people that are close to celebrities, how they treat them, you know, how they, it's that stuff. But you know what? We'll move on.
Actually. Yeah. On to things that we love.
Yeah. So here's something that's pretty cool that I wanted to show you. So there's these Gundam arcade games that I can play on MAME. But what's interesting is Retro Achievements doesn't work with MAME. It has to do with the way arcade files are read in the MAME emulator. Like, I don't know the tech behind it, but what's cool is it still shows, hey, I played it because I wanted to try these games out. So this one is Mobile Suit Gundam Final Shooting. It's a light gun game that's really fun.
Nice. But
what's neat is they have this recent players activity, right? And I'm like, wait a minute. So three different people were playing this random Gundam arcade game on the 10th and then the 7th and the 5th. And it's like, it's actually interesting to see that there's always people playing an old Gundam arcade game, but taking in account, we only know this because it's people that not only do they have their MAME emulator, but then they have it set up to sync with Retro Achievements to tag this activity anyway. So to think how many people are actually really playing this at on a consistent basis, which I would,
if you extrapolate it by, you know, like what percentage of players are actually syncing.
Yeah. I would think it would be low. I would think it would be under 10%.
Oh, yeah.
This is another one. This is Gundam EX Review. This is like one of the earlier fighters. I think there's a couple. Yeah, it does. I was checking out the pixel art is awesome. But again, people are playing it all the time. And so it's like, I think this should be good information for Bandai to know if people are willing to play these games, shouldn't they have them somehow acquirable in a very easy way? That's easier than someone, one, having to search for an emulator, know how to even set up an emulator, then know how to set up Retro Achievements when it could be people that just have their box, their Xbox, their PlayStation, their Switch, and
I swear a lot of this has to do with the fact that, well, I say the fact, my observation is that Bandai Namco is very similar to Sony. And one of the criticisms you've had of Sony that I think is a valid one in the past is that Nintendo and Xbox seem to get it, that backwards compatibility is key. Yeah. It is the way of the future. The Nintendo Switch has the Switch Online, you know, the extra service. You can play all of these old Game Boy, SNES, all these different, now the 64, which technically you can get them better on emulators, but you know, yeah. that's a conversation for another time. At least they're making them available, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing with Xbox. Backwards compatibility is always a big thing to them. It seems to me like Sony, because they don't really care about hosting a retro library, they don't really care about, you know, continued support for old games. Similarly, Bandai Namco doesn't seem to care about old Gundam games. They're like, once it's out of service, it's gone. Like, we don't care.
And we're seeing people play them.
But there's an audience there.
Yeah.
So it's like, why not just, you know, whether it's putting them on Game Pass or putting them on Switch Online, depending on, like, obviously what platform they were on before, make those things available. Like,
yeah. Somehow. And I think, so to compare it, I always love to do the Star Wars comparison, because most old Star Wars games have been re-released.
Yeah.
Like the Super Nintendo ones that I love, you know, the Super Star Wars, the random ones that I've never even really played, you know.
Dude, I was just thinking about firing up Galactic Battlegrounds. I've been craving an RTS lately, so
yeah, apparently there's one in the works, Star Wars one. It's supposed to be like is that the one that's the Star Wars Total War, which not exactly what I'm into RTS wise, but it could be cool. But you know, so going back to this, like, I think this is an opportunity where Bandai and Capcom does this. Now I'm thinking about it. What's SNK does this. They always have every time a new console comes out, here's our collection. Here's our collection. There needs to be a Gundam video game collection where they just maybe there's three volumes and then they just pick. But this is just another way where a couple things that Gundam is out there for people that are looking for games to play. Oh, here's Gundam. You know, it also makes it to where maybe that's another revenue stream for them. You know, it might help them understand how big video games are. You know, we talked about before, plastic, sure, that's big for them, but it already has fallen back to the levels it was before.
Yeah.
Video games, you know, make a lot of money. You know, they really need to get into Team Swagalo saying, you know, facts, the PS2 Gundam games are so good. Yeah, having a collection. Yeah. Versus collection.
And, you know, I think that it's funny because technically the PS3 game Side Stories is that, like, collection.
Yes, right? That's a really good point. Yeah.
But I think that would have been a way more successful game if they had, translated it to English and released it in. Well, oh, go ahead.
No, what do you think, though, if it was the original games instead of remakes?
Then it would be even easier to produce.
Yeah, you're right.
Instead of recreating these games in their new engine, just, you know, and I mean, you can even just retexture some of them and they'd look fantastic. Yeah. Because, and we've talked about this with, like, some of the PS2 games, Federation versus Zeon, Gundam versus Zeta Gundam? I think it was Gundam versus Zeta Gundam that came out on the GameCube. But only in Japan. Oh,
yeah, that's right.
And the GameCube graphics look fantastic.
Yeah, so.
And it has four-player split screen, which the original didn't. So it's like those minor little quality of life changes.
Even if it's controls. Like, even if they decided just to mess with the camera, the way that we're a little bit. Yeah, I think just re-releasing the stuff they already have is a missed opportunity. So, okay, one other thing I wanted to talk about. Which I thought was pretty interesting, because there was some news about that Silver Phantom game, that VR game or experience. I'm actually really excited about this because
it is kind of cool.
It's not a game. It's not a series, but it's like it's not even interactive. From what I understand, you're like inside as it's happening, like the battles and all that.
It's like Star Tours.
Yes. Which I would love. So have you happened to have been to Disney since they now have like the Resistance one?
No, I haven't.
Cause it's cool. It's just like that, where like you're flying and like they had the Gundam one in Japan too.
Yeah.
Or didn't they have a guy that was named, Adam? That was or Blue. Anyway, I am so what I'm trying to say is, look, it says additionally attendees can look forward to a major announcement that will be made during the panel, providing exclusive insights into the future of Mobile Suit Gundam Silver Phantom. Would you say a major announcement if it was just going to be the release date? I don't think so. What the other, yeah. The only other thing I can think of is because they've only announced Meta. Maybe they're going to say it's going to be on PSVR 2 and whatever else. But is that major?
I mean, to me, I wouldn't say so. Would you consider like a Gunpla that, you know, the Silver Phantom Gunpla a major announcement?
No.
Yeah.
So providing exclusive insights into the future of Mobile Suit Gundam Silver Phantom. So because we're saying it's the future of it. So, yeah. Since it's the future of it, I wonder if the idea is, okay, it's going to have this VR cinematic, it does say interactive story, but maybe then they're going to decide to make it streamable, like in a way that's not VR, or make it where it's going to be available on other platforms that don't require VR or something. I would think the major announcement has to be
instant bold.
Or it could be, I've seen that happen before where they're like, hey, major announcement. And they're like, we'll have a trailer tomorrow. And it's like, what the? Pilot is Adam Stingray. Thank you. So it's the Abaku ride. The guy's name is Adam.
Adam Stingray.
That's pretty cool. That's a cool name.
It's almost as cool as Adam Blue.
Stingray is a pretty badass last name, though. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
I mean, strikes fear into the heart of Steve Irwin.
R.I.P.
Sorry. Speaking of getting canceled, sorry, guys.
Well, that joke is better than mine. I was going to say, sounds like a name of a Street Sharks character.
Oh,
which only like three people would get that. And was that funny? That was like a nerd joke. You had the really good topical joke, you know. But also at this thing, Gavin Hignite, he's the writer of Requiem, is going to be there, and I have briefly spoken to him before. He did seem interested to be on the show. Hopefully that happens. I think he has to wait till all this stuff dies down because they're not revealing things yet. So
yeah,
so that'd be cool when that happens. But
sweet.
Anyway, so what's the takeaway from today's episode?
Well, you know, it's that Alucard and Char are two peas in a pod.
There you go. I like that answer. And I wonder, how much is that me just trying to find comparisons to the things I like? Or is it coincidentally, or are they rooted? It's Japanese story. I tend to like Japanese stuff. You know, yeah.
Well, you know, I think that it goes back to sort of like the Joseph Campbell thing, and like all stories technically have the same
the structure, archetypes, right? And, yeah.
So we always look for those sources of trauma, those sources of conflict that I think you see crop up.
Yeah, and just like you were talking about earlier, when it comes to like the things that are bad, and it's more like these. A lot of like Castlevania is about vampires trying to take over the world and Dracula killing people, and Gundam is about war. It's being able to relate in these situations that we don't want to live in real life. So it kind of gives this edge, this alternate reality that we get to like experience, but learn things about.
It's like therapy.
It's all like, well, therapy.
And I mean, shoot, even Luke Skywalker, there's that quote about, you know, if you're afraid to face your father, he literally had to do that. And that was part of the conflict of the original trilogy of Star Wars. So, I mean, it's something that we always.
And that's interesting because, you know, George Lucas did say that, you know, he based Darth Vader off of his father. So that's pretty interesting there.
So then him writing the story was him facing his father, which is.
Yeah, that's kind of
almost therapeutic. Like,
I wonder if that's what helped with that dynamic, even though the plan wasn't that it was Luke's father, he still wrote it in that way. And maybe that helped him get through the story character. Maybe he saw Luke in himself, and so he wanted to write Darth Vader as the dad. Sometimes that helps. Like when I'm coming up with stuff, it helps to have that connection. But
yeah, definitely.
So I think that was a good moral of the story. I don't know.
Yeah. Definitely anyway. A better takeaway than, I mean, we went to some dark places this episode. So
no, that's okay though. Team Swagos will end this. Y'all are awesome. I love Gundam so much. I named my son Casval. Keep up the show. Hey, wow. Cheers. Well, thank you.
That love you too. And you know what? That is awesome.
That is. That's
I don't really think cool. I could get away with that. Like my wife would call me out instantly.
She that is a cool name though. Gundam.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's unique, you know? So, all right, guys, we're going to hang out. This was so much fun. Thanks for everyone in the chat. Always a good time. Remember, yeah, there's a link in the description for the Streamlabs thing. Because, again, if you guys want to, like, have your own part of the show, submit an essay. And I'll read it. We can talk about it. But
there we go.
Until next time, see you guys later.